welcome to another episode of Playmakers. My guest today is the author of the book Roar and also specialises on an online course called Women Are Not Small Men. I'm very, very fascinated to hear this kōrero today. Joining me is Dr. Stacey Sims. Thank you for joining me, Stacey.
Thanks for having me.
Now, my first question, of course, you are concentrating, researching women's physiology, especially in sport performance. And I would love to know, first off the bat, how this even became a passion project for you.
I won't say the exact years, because all the way back when I was at university, and I was on the rowing team, and also at the same time got into exercise physiology. So I was trying to figure out like what were the best methods and what we should be doing as women in the boat. Because there were times where when we were training just like the men, training just as hard, but it seemed like we wouldn't peak at the same time for key races, or there are times where we were flatter and we weren't responding the same way. So then in the classroom, I was asking these questions and no one had the answers. And then I'd volunteer to be in things like the metabolism lab to be a participant just for classroom information and kind of stuff. And then my results would be different and I'd throw them out. Why are you doing that? Oh, well, they're an anomaly. We don't really study women or include them because it can confound the variables of the data. And I just like sat on it for a while going, well, that doesn't really make sense to me. Like, why would my data be thrown out? I work just as hard, but because it doesn't really fall into the same norms as what you're getting from the men, that just doesn't make sense. And I kept getting that pushback and pushback. And then when I got to grad school, I was really interested in overtraining. So I started looking at women and overtraining and looking at the differences between women and men and things right down to like how our brains and attitudes respond to overtraining versus men, where men will get more aggressive and they'll get really angry, but women get anxious and depressed and flat. And none of that was discussed. And so really trying to push it out. And people were like, well, why do you want to study women? We don't know enough about men. And so it's really been that whole like drive of, because women are over half the population and we are different and we respond differently. So yeah, it's been there.
Yeah, your tagline really, you know, a lot of people talk about that tagline of women are not small men.
Yeah.
So how did you come up, I mean, that's quite obvious, but how did you come up with that? And what is the message when you put that line out there?
Yeah, so when I was doing sex difference lectures at Stanford, they're always to first years undergrads, and it would always be in the afternoon where people would be a bit sleepy. And I really wanted to get the boys in the class to listen, and I would start it as women are not small men, and the women would be like, yeah, that's right. And the boys would sit up, and it's really about trying to get people to be aware that women are different from men. We're born with sex differences, and these affect every cell in our body. And so when you start really saying, okay, well, women are not small men, it's look at us as equal but different in the fact that we need to have our own research, we need to have our own training methodologies, we have to have our own recovery methodologies to really achieve performance potential. Because I don't think women have achieved performance potential because we've been told how to train based on male methodology.
And something else that I found interesting too was the nutrition side of things is it's a pretty big aspect in the things that you talk about.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about diets and things like that, those two have only been centered around men. Which is so strange.
And this comes from more like the public health research where you have all these diets now, like the ketogenic diet, the intermittent fasting, low carb, high fat. All of those are really based on clinical populations of obese, sedentary men who have to lose weight quickly for surgery. And then you start disseminating down to more of the sedentary population and what's fast for weight loss and some positive health outcomes. But then when you look and bring it over into the fitness world or the active population, it doesn't sit well. Because there's a sex difference in our hypothalamus that really receives how much food we're getting. And the threshold for women for sensitivity to that is so much lower than it is in men. So men can get by with ketogenic, can get by with low carb, they can get by with intermittent fasting. But for women, these neurons get perturbed and it tells our bodies to slow our resting metabolic rate down, to slow our thyroid down, to stop producing luteinizing hormone, which then stops our menstrual cycles. And we see this so often, like women will come to me and be like, I don't understand, I'm doing everything right, but I'm putting on body fat, I'm getting slower, I'm getting tired. And so do I need to train harder and eat less? And it's like, well, actually, no, you need to train less and eat more. Mm. And people freak out about that because they're like, what do you mean? This is counter to everything that I've ever heard. And it's because you take it from the clinical population and bring it into the fitness world or even the high performance world. And it's just not appropriate.
What have you found over your years of study? I mean, obviously, you were an athlete yourself and you saw that there was this lack of research.
Yeah.
Were you quite surprised at how maybe non-existent this research was? And how, I mean, is this growing the more years you've been investing in it?
I was really, I guess, not really angry, but really miffed that there wasn't stuff out there. Mm. And then people would say, oh, well, it's because there's not enough funding. Funding is tight. Or women have a menstrual cycle, so it's really hard to include them. Or, yeah, we included women, but we only use them in the low hormone phase of their menstrual cycle where they're most like men. So you're really trying to disseminate, like, okay, what's appropriate here? Because women just don't live for 2 weeks out of the month, right? And really trying to push it and understand it and start doing your own research, still getting that pushback of the funding and, well, you really have this tight timeline, so you better just do follicular phase and don't look at the high hormone phase. And the more you become aware of that research not being there, the more you start critiquing other researches being put out. So this is where you're looking and saying, hey, wait, we know that women should be included, or you included women, but this design isn't right. And now I'm on the upper end of the academic spectrum and really critiquing scientific design and methodology right down to examining being a PhD examiner, where the thought hasn't even crossed their mind that women or men are different. So when you get in it and you understand that the research isn't there and start pushing it and trying to get collaborations going, because there's a groundswell now of people doing proper methodology and asking the questions and trying to get it out there, but there's still whole bunch of people who aren't even aware of it. And this is where it comes down to writing guidelines for the journals, for author guidelines. So if you're going to submit a scientific study for publication, there are certain criteria if it includes women or doesn't.
How much has it been down to a woman, you know, look, giving this research through a woman's lens?
Sort of. And I've encountered quite a few female academics. It still hasn't crossed their mind because they've grown up in that whole environment, right? Just like a female chef grows up in the male kitchen and everything is just, you have to do things harder and harder. And when you start talking to female academics or female researchers, and even right down to a mouse model where they're just using male rats, and then they're like, oh my gosh, wait, no, we need to start using female rats. Mm. So it's the bench science stuff is starting to come up. And then when you start talking to other male and female younger academics, they're like, oh yeah, this is really interesting. So again, it's the awareness factor, and part of it definitely is that whole male lens and how you grow up in that whole research world. And I think, just like in sport, the more you talk about it, the more that conversation is being had, then the more people are seeking out how to do it right. Mm. I just, yeah, I look at them like, we just need this whole groundswell of people to come through.
Yeah.
And it is hard, like academics, it's hard because more and more people are looking for industry.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's an interesting time for sure.
Yeah. And you mentioned menstrual cycles, which is something, especially in sport, is just not spoken about or seen as a reality for some athletes with coaches or, you know, even through the school ages to adult life.
Yeah.
And I was intrigued when I heard, you know, the importance of, you know, tracking your menstrual cycle in terms of improving your performance. So talk a bit about that.
So we say your period is an ergogenic aid. And we try to get people to be very comfortable saying the word period. Mm. A lot of times I'll be in a room giving a talk to coaches and I'll be like, okay, everyone turn to your neighbor and say the word period. And right? And they laugh and they can't say it. And it's like, well, what's so funny? It's natural. Mm. And bringing that kind of awareness. But the, I guess it's a couple of layers within sport. It's always been taboo because the positive aspects of sport have always been the masculine traits. Mm-hmm. So when you're having women come up in that masculine ideal, they don't want to talk about the fact they have a period or they have a menstrual cycle, because then they're deemed, oh, you're weaker, especially you're in that time of the month where you're weaker. So mm-hmm. no one wants to talk about it. And then the prevailing myth in it is, if you train hard enough and lose your period, then that's a good thing. But when we look at it and say, no, actually, when you have your period, it's a sign of health and the fact that your body is able to take on more stress and you can adapt to that stress and keep progressing. So when we say your period is an ergogenic aid, one, it's a sign that, yes, you are stressing your body and your body can still function because it hasn't had any kind of perturbance to say, let's stop the menstrual cycle. But the other thing is the way the hormones fluctuate throughout the month. So we know that when you're in that day one is the first day of your period, all the way through ovulation, which is around day 14. In those lower hormone phases, we are, quote, more like men, where we can access carbohydrate more readily, we can hit high intensities, we recover better, we sleep better, our core temperature is lower. And then around ovulation, when you have an estrogen surge, because estrogen by itself is anabolic. This means that we can go in and we can do a really hard training session and recover really well. Mm. And then when both hormones, progesterone and estrogen, start to come up after ovulation, this is where every cell in the body gets affected by these hormones. And so we start going, okay, well, our body accesses more free fatty acids. And this is the time to work more of that steady state and work on technique and then have a little bit of downtime to absorb all that hard training. Whereas if you're not tracking your cycle, you might go, well, how come that session didn't go very well? Mm. And you start having all those negative thoughts that we often hear outside. Oh, I'm not fit enough. I didn't sleep well. I didn't recover well. I didn't train hard enough. Not really realizing that every month on day 23, you feel flat. So if you understand that, then you say, okay, well, I'll have a recovery day that day because 2 days before I can hit it hard. So tracking gives you that objective data to really dial your training in for yourself. But then also following where those hormones are, you can really moderate and modify your training to be able to hit it hard when your body wants you to hit it hard to recover well. Because when we're training, that's not when we're getting fitter. We're getting fitter when we recover. And we want to recover from a high stress to really get those fitness gains.
What are your encounters with, you know, when you talk about menstrual cycles, menopause and things like that, especially here in New Zealand with, you know, it's so multicultural, mm-hmm. you know, culture, yep. religion, those taboo subjects are not spoken about. Mm-mm. How do you break through those types of barriers, or what, you know, I know you're doing a lot of work to try and get through those barriers, yep. but that must be, you know, huge thing to get through.
Yeah. One of my good friends and colleagues, Holly Thorpe, she is a sociologist that does all the female athlete health stuff. And we've combined forces a lot to really understand the context around it. Mm. So understanding the cultural nuances that come with all of these taboos. So approaching someone who is from a Pacifica background and understanding what it all means. So then you're like bringing it right down to, I don't necessarily want to know because this is on you and not in a negative way, but it's your own body and your own cycle. So if you're tracking and you can figure out when you feel good and when you don't, then you let us know. And if it stops, you let us know so that we can put things into play where it comes back. And then also things like ice baths and things. So a lot of times you have this discrepancy in the sports science world where everyone has to go do an ice bath. But mm-hmm. if it's taboo because you're right there in your menstrual cycle and you don't want to get in the ice bath, if you are looked to be not being going along with everybody, but no one understands your culture, then mm-hmm. it causes this shift and this rift. But if you have the undercurrent of understanding the culture and where people are in their menstrual cycle, how they feel about it, then it removes that negativity of not going along and not being a player. So really navigating those waters gives an extra context to it, which is really interesting in New Zealand because everyone is very aware and talks about the different cultural aspects, but like in the States, no one does. Mm. So when you start bringing the context in, people are like, oh, I get it now. Oh yeah, they're not being belligerent. It's just how they grew up and what their beliefs are.
Mm. And a lot of the time, it's it's just this, like, dirty thing, you know? And it's a negative. How many people are you talking to in New Zealand right now? Because to me, working, you know, I regularly interview and talk to athletes and coaches and things, and this never comes up. So, I mean, are you working with, you know, currently with, you know, New Zealand teams and athletes right now to try and, you know, get this out there at the very least?
Yeah, a few individuals and a couple of teams and coaches, but I also sit with the Whisper Group with High Performance Sport New Zealand, and we're a collaboration of many different expertise, so sociologists, physiologists, dietitians, some endocrinologists, some sports physicians, and our bottom line is trying to get this information out there, specifically with regards to low energy availability and relative energy deficiency in sport, which has come up a lot in the news recently with a lot of our female athletes feeling broken and dropping out. And when we start pushing that out on the basis of the information we had from our national survey, more and more people are being interested. Finally, High Performance Sport New Zealand is going, oh, wait, we should start listening to this and start trying to get the education out there, which is good. And because New Zealand's small and a lot of the NSOs are so centralized, primarily up here, the conversations are going through people with boots on the ground, so like the physiologists and sports scientists that work with the athletes on up. So we're hoping that over the next less than Olympic cycle that is going to be disseminated out there everywhere. But individual parents have contacted me about their girls and athletes. I've had some professional athletes who have dropped out of the high performance to go pursue other contracts and needing help as well because they weren't getting the support. And then I've also had older male coaches go, okay, let's talk about this. I want my athletes to be healthy.
Talk to us a little bit about this online course that is that you have running. What is it about? Obviously, it's mainly about what we talk about. But talk to us about that and what you hope, you know, to put out there to the public.
Yeah, this was pretty much the brainchild of my husband because he's a trained physio and biomechanist and then got involved in video analysis software for sport, which then became more online education stuff. And as he was growing within the company and learning more about online education platforms, he's like, we need to take your book and put it into a course. And I was like, I don't know about that because full-time academic, how am I going to get this done? But then we bit the bullet and did it. And it's really just trying to disseminate the science into easy speak, where people who are really interested in this, coaches, athletes, doctors, other allied health professionals who want to know about this and where do you go, where I've had 20 years to amass all this information and have the references and the literature and want to explain it. So that's what this course is. It's 7 weeks of, I think, close to 80 hours worth of material where you're listening, learning, interaction, asking questions, to go everywhere from the history of women in sport to the menstrual cycle, to oral contraceptive pill, puberty, menopause, postmenopause, how you train, how you eat, what's the best way for tracking. So kind of all the stuff that we've been talking about, it's all in one little tidy course.
This is something that is a global, I don't know if the word's issue, but, you know, this is something that could benefit women all
everywhere
over the world. And obviously you've got a bit of a different accent to me today, so you are from offshore originally, so, you know, is there the potential to, you know, to spread the word internationally?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've been back in New Zealand for almost 5 years now, and over the course of time I've seen the small little conference on the east coast of the States grow from 100 people to 5,000. And in New Zealand, we put on a couple of female athlete symposiums and conferences, and the first one had maybe 50, and the last one we had close to 1,000. And so the information is there, and people are wanting it. And over the past 4 or 5 years, seeing it become more available, not necessarily rightfully, but on social media, so people are talking about it. And the more people talk about it, the more people want the information. So the collaborations between Australia and here, in the US and the UK, those are the small pockets of people who are doing a lot of the research and the dissemination. So we're trying to really go through our different pockets to encompass it and get the messaging out there.
How do you research this? How do you go about looking for that information with a subject that nobody talks about?
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? I think people talk about it in the regards of women in their 40s get adrenal fatigue, right? And so when you start going, well, what is adrenal fatigue? And then you start looking, this is the way my mind works, because I had a really good mentor at Stanford who started as a physiologist, then got into public health. And she was the primary investigator for the Women's Health Initiative that was the big U.S. study that looked at postmenopausal women and health risks and everything that came up. So when I was at Stanford, I did some research in there and was really going, well, where are the active women? And then had my other hand in human performance going, there's still a lot of active women who are in their 40s and they're having all these signs and symptoms that is supposedly adrenal fatigue, but there's no real such thing as adrenal fatigue. What's going on? So you start seeing the symptomology and people going, well, my training isn't working for me. What's going on? So then you start looking at the hormones and then start looking at all the different areas of research from public health to the fertility research to endocrinology to sport performance. No, there's nothing in sport performance. Okay, well, there's still this. So just collaborating, gathering the data and trying to answer the questions and then finding small pockets of people who are actually doing research on active women who are in perimenopause, where they're like, oh, there's estrogen dominance. How does that affect our lean mass? How does it affect our fueling? What kinds of things do we need to do to mitigate the supposed weight gain that comes with menopause? Because everyone has these images of when women hit menopause, they become really flabby and they get the big minnow pot and they're not very good at sport. And that's just because the information that comes for training and maintaining health comes from male data. And women hit an aging point right at the onset of menopause, which is your period stop. Men have a long ramp to it. So the data that's coming from the long ramp isn't effective when we hit menopause. It's not the long, slow distance. It's not the easy stuff. It's the lifting heavy stuff. We need to do that because estrogen used to do this kind of stuff for our muscles. Now we have to look at how we can do it from an external stress. And again, it's people like, oh my gosh, finally, it's working. So my new tagline, I got a new tagline.
Oh yes.
Yeah. menopause is the birthday for the rest of your life. And people are like, what is that, what? Because menopause is actually one day on the calendar and people don't get that. They're like, oh, menopause. Menopause is at one point in the calendar that marks 12 months and no periods. And then it's the rest of your life. But it's those years leading up to that one point where all the changes happen. Yeah. This is like in your mid-40s, sometimes early 40s, where you're like, oh, I've got extra body fat, and what's going on? And then all the trendy diets start coming to play and wrecking everybody. So you start going, yeah, these hormone shifts, and these are things we can do, so that when they hit that one point in time, they don't have that stereotypical body that no one wants, and they're performing well, and they put into play different training and nutrition strategies that then help them when they get older. So they're maintaining bone density, they're maintaining lean mass, they're maintaining power, speed, all of that kind of stuff.
And also I think this kind of information would help you mentally.
Yeah.
That this is actually normal.
Yeah.
It's actually a beautiful thing and that this is just a part of us.
Yeah.
What kind of feedback must you get from, you know, from women who listen to your talks? And because for some women it can be quite life-changing.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people are like, I thought it was me. I thought something was, I was seriously sick. What's going on? And there was a woman who wrote in about doing the multi-sport God Zone race that was a few weekends ago. It was a massive, huge, like really hard, arduous race. Mm. And she said, this is the first time I haven't done long, slow distance, but I did a lot of heavy resistance work, high intensity work, really put in carbohydrates in and around training, wasn't injured, went in and had the best race I've ever had. And she's like, this works. And this is the first time I see the light where I'm going to be able to be an athlete as my life gets, as I, you know, keep continuing in life. Yeah. So to me, I'm like, oh, yay. That's awesome. So excited. Yeah.
Starting to come around full circle for you kind of thing.
Yeah. Because it's a rarity to hear all the positive stories because you hear all the backlash from people who are like, well, why do we need to train women differently? No, I'm not going to do that. And than having to explain again and again and again. But then when people come around and tell you all the positive stories around it, you're like, okay, keep pushing, it's worth it.
Oh, you're doing God's work, honestly. And I know that just sitting here listening to this information, and it's just a snippet of what you're doing, I really appreciate and find it very, very fascinating. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.